House Committee on Intergovernmental Affairs, February 28, 1989.
Al said to get with it, so we'll get with it.
Committee on Intergovernmental Relations have come to order. Clerk will note those and excuse them that are absent, please. You have some comments for us to start with.
Right. Before we start the hearing on House Bill 2516, Mr. Chair, just wanted to announce that we have received letters from both the City of Salem and the City of Eugene, which have been distributed to you. Both of these letters, I believe, are in opposition to the bill as it's currently written. The other item I'd like to bring to your attention is that in the preliminary analysis of the bill that I prepared, there is an error under provisions of the measure on the third line. It should read, the current notice deadline is 30 days after the effective date of the annexation, not 30 days before.
Where are we here?
Line 3 under provisions of the measure should read 30 days after the effective date rather than 30 days prior to the effective date.
Anything else?
That's all I have, so we can go ahead and...
Well, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2516 relating to annexation of territories to cities, and we'll see who's lined up. Gary Wilhelm, U.S. West, you want to explain both sides of the issue to us, please, Gary?
Do my best. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Wilhelms, and I'm Director of Legislative Affairs for U.S. West Communications in Oregon.
Excuse me.
House Bill 2516 is a simple, straightforward bill. In 1981, our company proposed and the city supported a bill which became ORS 222.005, which this bill amends. The intent was to establish responsibility for notification to public utilities of annexations of territory by cities. The reason was, at least in our company, that we were missing some of the annexations, and as a result, our franchise tax base was not updated appropriately, and consequently, our franchise fee payments were short. Through audits, we would discover this and, of course, would have to correct the situation. But calculating how much might be owed retroactively is always difficult, and a settlement would often have to be negotiated rather than calculated. ORS 222.005 requires that the cities, as the taxing authority, have the responsibility to notify the utilities of the territory annexed and the effective date of the annexation. And until they do, the utilities are under no obligation to pay any additional fees. I don't recall there being any opposition to the original bill when it passed in 1981. And now I understand from our company tax folks that we are having problems similar to what we had before. It seems that we are sometimes notified too late to get our computerized billing system programmed by the effective date of the annexation, and therefore find that our franchise fee payments are once again inaccurate in some cases. House Bill 2516 makes a simple change in the notification requirement from 30 days after the annexation effective date to 60 days before. In addition, the bill would require the cities to provide the utilities a list of the street addresses involved in the annexation. Now, at one point, we were ready to reword this request because we thought it might be overly burdensome to the cities. But I understand, however, that the cities have a street address list available through the usual annexation process anyway. So we would very much like to leave this provision in the bill. It would not only make the utilities' job easier, it would go a long way toward ensuring an accurate updating of the franchise fee base, and thus more accurate and complete payments by the utilities to the cities. The cities would be assured accurate payments, which would equate to more revenue earlier. The utilities would no longer face the administrative and costly burden of retroactively calculating or negotiating the amounts due as a result of an audit, and oftentimes also having to pay penalties. We think that House Bill 2516 is a simple but good bill, and I hope you will act favorably on it. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Gary. Questions from the committee? Representative Wehe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Gary, right now, there is a possibility that boundary commissions may not approve annexations as proposed. What does that do as far as this bill is concerned? That sounds to me like it might present a problem for the cities to try and notify you 60 days in advance when they won't even know until it's approved what the actual annexation is going to be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wehage, I found that out this morning myself. We had not given considerations to those cases where boundary commissions were involved, and I understand this, at least in a conversation with the City of Portland, that that could be a problem because they may not be advised by the boundary commission 60 days in advance of the annexation date. And my solution to that problem would simply be to require that the boundary commission notify the cities 90 days in advance of the annexation.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Representative.
I have another question. I don't want to necessarily direct to Mr. Wilhelms, but isn't there a proposed change as far as the effective date for annexation that we're considering on some other bill? Has anybody seen that? I heard that there might be something where annexations would be approved like on an annual basis, so everything becomes effective at the same time. Okay.
I'm not familiar with that bill.
Must have been dreaming. Would something like that, Gary, if there was a particular date
60 days ahead of when they vote for
far in advance after the boundary commission has approved an annexation, if it were far enough in advance to allow your company to properly enter the information, it sounds to me like you just need more time in one way or another before the annexation actually becomes effective. Currently, in an annexation, it becomes effective upon the date of approval by the boundary commission. Is that correct?
I am, frankly, not familiar. I can't answer the question as it deals with boundary commissions. I just can't. I'm not that familiar with it.
Okay, maybe I'll pose that question to the other representative.
I'm sure that there are others who can answer that question. The problem is simply that when we passed the bill in 81, we thought it was good the way it was, but it didn't solve the problem of getting the new addresses online as of the effective date of the annexation. We were still doing it in some cases after the fact, in which case franchise tax payments were not calculated appropriately by us. We were missed whatever period of time lapsed between the effective date of the annexation and the time that we actually got them online in our billing systems. We were missing that revenue and we're not applying the franchise tax to that revenue. And thus, we're that much short in our payments to the cities. And that's what would be picked up on audits. Well, as long as we have a posting time of after the fact, we're going to face that problem. We're never going to be able to get this thing accurate unless we can get notified enough in advance so that we can accurately program our computers or whatever billing system our companies might have and get that online in advance so that as of the effective date of the annexation, we have it entered appropriately and begin calculating tax appropriately on the revenues derived from those customers that now fall within the city limits.
Do you have a method for making adjustments? Another way of handling this problem conceivably would be that you just go along and then you enter the data when you get it and as you can, and then you make an adjustment to your payment for the next time. I think we just passed a law this morning on the House floor regarding deferrals for counting purposes for the PUC. Is this not another way of dealing with it?
Well, Representative Stein, it's kind of apples and oranges, I think, in this case, because what we're talking about here is remitting tax to a city that would be derived from the application of the franchise tax rate or fee to the revenues that come from services in that geographic area, which is now in the city limits. Customers are connecting and disconnecting their service all the time in that. Theoretically, they can be connecting and disconnecting from our network within that area all the time. So to go back in time and recalculate what might be due to a city in franchise taxes would be extraordinarily difficult.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weah.
Gary, have you ever gone back and retroactively charged people for those taxes, those pass-through taxes? In other words, paying a double tax for a particular month?
Well, I hate to ever use the word never, not that I know of. I honestly do not believe that that's ever happened.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I guess I don't even understand how this franchise fee works. Do you add it on to the customer's bill?
Representative Hostica, we're entering into there's another bill that deals with this, which I'm sure you'll become familiar with as the session goes on, but current PUC rule states that the first 3% in the telecommunications industry, the first 3% of franchise tax is spread through the rate base as an expense. Any franchise tax over and above 3% is then separately stated on the bill and is passed directly through to the consumer. So in the case of Eugene, for example, I believe they have a 5% franchise in Eugene. The first 3% is spread statewide in the rate base, and only 2% will show up as a city tax on the consumer's bill.
Gary, let me understand. I'm starting to display my ignorance on the bill. The effective date of an annexation, that has to go to election of the people, doesn't it? The annexation?
No, not in all cases.
Well, which ways? Most of them do or don't? I don't know.
I think of my experience, Representative Markham, has been that most of them do not.
And so the effective date of an annexation, then, that they do not go with the people, is that known way out in front? See, I don't know how you can...
Well, Representative Markham, my experience has only been in the communities that I've lived in and worked with. And what I used to do routinely as a manager for the phone company in Klamath Falls was get a copy of the minutes of the city council meetings. And I would track the ordinance, the annexation ordinances, as they went through first reading, second reading, third reading. And so I could track what the effective date was going to be because it's part of the ordinance. And usually, as a matter of fact, okay, was part of the record of the meeting. And unfortunately, we can't do that in all cases, nor do I suppose that the cities would expect us to do that in all cases. But right now the system is that the cities mail to us the effective date of the annexation.
Okay.
And we that part of the system, current system, works all right. We are getting notified. The problem is that in many cases we're not being notified until after the effective date, in which case we still have the problem of having inaccurate application of the franchise tax.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Wilhelm?
The problem with it, Gary, is that there are too many cases where you don't know whether the annexation will go through or not. To require, I think, a city to give you information 60 days ahead and you don't even know whether the annexation could be effective or not seems to me to be a real imposition. The annexation may be effective at the time the city annexes, and if it's in case of a possible election, let's say it election is required under the statute, or you got a case where a group of people can sign a petition requesting that election be held, and in that case the election would be whatever, sometimes beyond the action, for example, of the local government or the boundary commission, and then the election might or may not be successful. So it seems to me that in some cases you would be asking a city to give you information weeks and weeks in advance of what might or might not be an annexation. How do you justify that?
That, as I said, Representative Cease, as I said, I found out this morning that was a situation that existed in those areas where there were boundary commissions, and
Commissioner,
I'm sorry about that.
I would say that applies even where you don't have a boundary commission. You don't know whether there's going to possibly be an election at the time the annexation is proposed, do you?
I guess that you could not say so positively.
Right.
I would think in most cases it would be the case. The And there must be an answer to that. If there are amendments that can be made to the bill, of course, that's fine with me. But the thing that we would ask for, and at least our company would ask for, and I'm only speaking for my own company in this case, is that until there is some surety that this annexation is going to occur, and until we are properly notified, then we do not feel that our tax obligation should commence until that time. We don't think it's appropriate for us to have to go back and recalculate, and which we cannot always do 100% accurately, and thus we enter into negotiations and sometimes have penalties levied against us. And we just do not believe that that's fair when we're actually the tax collector and not the taxing authority.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was a little late, maybe, this information may have been provided, I just didn't have it. When at this point do you have to pay? What's the period that you have to pay the tax? What does that cover? Does that start prior to the annexation?
Well, I believe it starts right on the date of the annexation. In order to be 100% accurate, you would add into your franchise tax base those addresses and the revenues from services provided at those addresses that fall within the city limits as of that particular date, the effective date of the annexation.
Well, Mr. Chair, what's your window there, Gary? I guess I'm not clear what your window, your time is. Why do you have to have that? I still don't understand why you have to have the information prior to the annexation.
Oh, Representative Cease, we send out bills on a cycle, of course. The different prefixes are cycled on different dates. And if you are notified on the 30th day or beyond prior to the effective date, then there are going to be some errors that you can't help. For example, the 30th day, well, the bill that is sent out on the 30th day or the 29th day, until you get the information properly processed in your machinery, you're going to miss those bill periods because the next time they are billed will be after the effective date of the annexation. And in order to ensure that that does not occur, you have to take it back 60 days. I don't know if that's a very clear explanation.
I guess it is. What would they lose? What is the billing period? Once a month?
Yes.
So they might conceivably, if you couldn't do this until you had the current information, would say it was after the annexation, effective date of the annexation, what might the city lose? A month or two on that annexation?
Well, it shouldn't lose more than a month, or if they were late in getting the word back to us, however many months they were late in getting the word to us. And in most cases, you're not talking about big money, but it's kind of a principle, and when you start going back to recalculate it, sometimes it makes not much difference as to how big the bucks are, but how long a period might have elapsed, or for other factors that would cause the calculations to be complicated.
Well, let me ask you, up to this point, have the cities complained about the process you currently have to use, or is it really just an inconvenience for the company?
I think it's more of an inconvenience to the company, and especially in the case of when it's picked up on audits, when we have to go through audits and then are assessed penalties in some cases, not in all cases. And those are the situations that give us heartburn.
But, Mr. Chair, you're not really dealing with a large amount of money in the case, are you?
Well, it can be. If you're talking about I'm not totally familiar with how large the East Side annexation that was proposed in the city of Portland was, but, I mean, you're talking a fairly substantial amount of territory, a fairly substantial number of customers, and a fairly substantial amount of revenue subject to tax. So it can be, depending upon the size of the annexation. Granted, most of the day-to-day annexations that cities deal with, I believe, are very small, and oftentimes have no telephone service involved or other utility service involved because it's raw land that's going to be developed.
Is it your view that some sort of agreement between the cities and the utility couldn't be worked out here?
Oh, no, I think that we can work out. I absolutely believe that we can work out any differences on this bill. As I said, I was not aware of any concern until this morning, and I sympathize with that. I mean, if the cities do not know 60 days in advance, it's pretty difficult for them to notify us.
That's what I'm wondering. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I think the cities would be delighted if they knew that their annexation would be guaranteed, but that doesn't always happen. Thank you.
Anybody else? Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Oh, let's see. The City of Portland, Susan McPherson, please. Well, we're going to get the whole first team here. Huh?
Not the troops. Okay.
Hang on, Gary. What's her name again?
Good afternoon. I'm Susan McPherson. I'm the Urban Services Manager for the City of Portland. I operate the annexation program as well as the services and the notification program subsequent to annexation. So I'm very familiar with the problems of the utilities, and actually our office has worked very closely with them to try and solve some of these logistical things. We had serious problems with providing just a legal description as required by law. Utilities couldn't pick up what street addresses were within a large area, say annexed a shopping center. A legal description would just tell you the outer boundaries, but until we figured out there were missing accounts because street addresses weren't provided, there was a problem. So we worked with them very closely and had a lot of the utilities in our office sometimes for up to 6 months at a time to try and get their systems online. So I want to state that we do want to work with the utilities and make their processes as easy and as workable for them as possible. And I'd like to talk a little bit about House Bill 2516 and the reason it doesn't work, even though you pretty well discussed it. I'll go run through it real quickly. The major problem with the bill is if you're on a fast-track schedule for annexation, particularly for a small city. I've talked to the cities of Beaverton, to Albany, Eugene, some of the cities that process single-lot annexations. People come in for service. That's why you have annexation. Sometimes it's a failing septic tank. Sometimes it's a water line extension. Sometimes it's they want to develop the land. And it's March, and they want to start construction in April, so they want to annex it and get their permits and get going. You don't know 60 days prior whether you have an annexation or not. You can make an annexation effective within 30 days at the time the applicant comes in front of your desk. So I see that this would be disruptive to the good legislation that you've passed in the prior two sessions, which streamlined the annexation process and enhance development. Also, there is a problem, a major problem, in that boundary changes are an action of the state. In the case of a boundary commission area, the boundary commission, a state-appointed body, votes in a hearing sometime after the city has applied for that boundary change. And they set the effective date. We have no control over that. We can request a certain effective date, but it's really out of our hands. It's really out of our hands whether they approve the boundary change or not. We make a case for it, but we're not the controlling factor. In the case of a non-boundary commission area, the timing is also out of the city's control. They pass an ordinance. They either have an election first or some kind of a staff review and collect consents to annex. They develop their proposal, the city passes an ordinance, and then they file it with the Secretary of State. At some time, 30 days subsequent to their filing, they receive a notice from the Secretary of State that tells them that the boundary change has been approved or not approved. They may be asked to refile at that time because they may have a mapping error, they may have a problem with signatures, they may have a multitude of problems. So they're not really aware of when that effective date is either until they get notice from the Secretary of State. It's not within their control. So that's why the legislation was set up in the first place to be 30 days after. That'd give the city 30 days to let the utilities know once they knew. Also, there's a real problem with potential revenue loss for cities under the way this bill is constructed. there were some questions earlier about the magnitude of that revenue loss. It might be rather small in a small city, but in a metropolitan area like Portland, it has a major annexation program with quite a bit of area coming in per year. We lose, for every 30 days, we lose $5,140 per 1,000 people annexed. And we annex anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 a year. One year we annex 30,000. So that revenue loss could be significant. With a four-month delay, like this bill would propose, if you had to delay it an additional 60 days because you weren't able to notify the utilities, you could go to $300,000 to $400,000 a year revenue loss. That translates into 8 to 10 positions.
Excuse me if I may, but I'm not tracking me. It seems to me the sooner you notify them, the sooner you're going to get your money. I think we're going like this.
Yeah, if you could notify them, but the problem is you don't know. We have all the information in our computers. We have no problem. Marge, could you turn that, please? We have no problem with notifying. That is not a problem, for at least for the city of Portland. It might be for some of the smaller cities who are not computerized. We have no problem with providing them with the street addresses, with the legal descriptions, and with the map. And we have those from the point we put that annexation in with city council. However, the uncertainty in the process, the Boundary Commission action, state Secretary of State order, or an election prohibits us from having this certainty to say, go ahead, yeah, put these in your system and start taxing these people effective May 1st or whenever we project it might happen.
Excuse me, but they're not going to scream to you. The individual phone payer might be.
They would be screaming to Gary, I believe.
Representative Hostica.
I guess I'm confused here. Is the revenue loss you're talking about the franchise fee revenue loss or property tax revenue loss or other kinds of revenue?
Actually, it's utility franchise fees. We have to notify the tax assessor as well as elections office and the Bureau of Emergency Communications. So I understand the logistics of this can be very arduous, and very willing to work with the utility company to come up with what I would hope would be a palatable solution for the city of Portland, but we have to do a little bit more work with the smaller cities because they're not on the same type of systems that we are. We're hooked right into all the information systems.
Mr. Chair, representatives, are all the annexations, is there a requirement that all annexations have to be sent to the Secretary of State for recording?
Yes. But the small cities, that is the Boundary Change Act. With cities that are in a Boundary Commission area, the Boundary Change Act is actually administered by the Boundary Commission itself. The Secretary of State records them, and then it triggers, like, counting the heads for population, right, okay, making the tax changes, all those other types of things.
So in other words, Mr. Chair, until either the Boundary Commission or the Secretary of State give you a notification, you don't know what the effective date is.
That's correct. We request a certain effective date, and we've gone for a delayed request based on needs like the utility companies and the tax assessor, but we can't assure that. It's only at the Boundary Commission's discretion, and if there's an election, at the will of the people.
Let me ask a question here before you continue. Why would a city then go back and on audit and fine the telephone or gas company?
Oh, we're not fining. We're only collecting tax at the point in time service is delivered.
I thought that we had testimony from the previous fellow that there were fines assessed at times.
At times because they didn't get their systems online. They had some problems getting their systems online for the thing that I mentioned earlier. That was the main reason. In your earlier legislation, you required two things only, a legal description and a map. When they took those legal descriptions and tried to translate them into accounts, they had a difficulty because they don't keep their accounts by legal description. They keep their account by street address. We had no requirement to provide them that information, but we bent over backwards to do that after it was discovered that that was a problem. So we've already made that you know, type of agreement with the utilities and provided them with the street addresses, that'll reduce their delay time. That was one of the problems.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you unless there's questions.
Okay, I would propose that we should meet with U.S. West and have an opportunity to sit down and work with them and see if we can figure out something that might work to the best advantage of the entities involved, and then propose some amendments to this bill that would solve the problem and work for the cities. Perhaps like what we do at the Bureau of Emergency Communications. What we do is I get, because they have to start responding with ambulance, with fire, with police, the minute that boundary changes. If it's at 12 o'clock midnight, they've got to be ready to go. So I give them all the information and I get them all set up. When it's in effect, I let them know. They turn their systems on and go. Now, Portland could do that, but I can't speak for the smaller cities on that.
Can't speak for downtown Riddle.
Riddle, I don't know for sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Philip Fell from the League of Oregon Cities, and we are pleased that Susan could appear before you to explain some of the technical problems. The situation for some
'85 to April 1, 1988, or can it just be applicable back to the September 1, 1985 date?
If the bill, in fact, is passed, and see, we may want to play it safe, if the bill is passed with an emergency clause before and signed before July 1st, we only have to go back to the September 85 date. I think you probably legislative council would know how to write that. I think we should never assume that's going to happen, even though we've contacted the governor's office and everybody's aware of the necessity to speed this along. So probably the answer to your question is legislative council would have to make it so that any annexations that occurred after that date to whenever are changed. Does that make sense, John?
So that April 1st, 1988 date doesn't have any particular significance in the chronology of this?
No. That is relevant only in that if we don't have the retroactivity clause, then annexations between September 1st, 85 and March 31st of 88 will not be affected by this bill. So the important date is the September 1st of 1985. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Philip Fell, League of Oregon Cities. I think I can be brief. Burton has essentially given the League's testimony on the substance of the bill. Representative Cease has given my testimony on the amendments. And essentially,
you didn't even ask me.
Appreciate it. We agree that indeed this is a problem, that it makes much more sense to enact this type of legislation to allow us to sort out at the local level just exactly how we choose to provide services in newly annexed areas. We think the bill gives us this opportunity. I intend to send the proposed amendments off yet this afternoon to a number of city attorneys and see what kind of issues they raise, and hopefully we'll be able to come back in here Thursday and say, great. If any of our attorneys raise some problems, I'll certainly contact Burton immediately, and we have the same objective, and if we need to say it differently, I think we can do that.
How do you send it off when we haven't even got it written yet?
We can talk about the concepts.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions, if Representative Young?
If we don't make this retroactive, is there a potential of some taxpayer saying, I didn't pay what I was supposed to pay, I paid too much, and now bundle up out of your errors and omissions?
I think there, Mr. Chairman, I think there's a couple of potentials. That's one of them. I shouldn't have paid those district bond levies. You owe me a refund is a very likely outcome, as well as perhaps challenging votes that were made by people who really weren't residing in the district. A creative person could almost find endless problems to bring up as a result of this mistake in 85. Yeah, illegal per diem payments. It's a It's awful, and that's why we've got to move this quickly.
Representative Lee.
I hope there are no lawyers in the audience. Looking for work.
30 seconds ago.
Running out the door. Right? I think one of the other factors, too, is that there may have been some people who lived outside the district who actually ran for office and were elected, and their position could be challenged, and all the decisions they've made since that time could be challenged.
We'll sneak this one through, then, folks.
Well, this is one bill that we have not talked to a lot of people about for that reason.
Other questions of the witnesses?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody in opposition? Okay. John, you'll go ahead and get those put together. Well, we'll close the hearing on 2697 and open the hearing on SJR 2, which is a proposed amendment to the Oregon Constitution requiring Legislative Assembly to provide procedure whereby metropolitan service districts may adopt home rule charters. Does anybody sign up?
Take a number.
We can't have a work session.
Well, if there's nobody testified, you want to have a work session? Yeah. Well, we'll close the hearing on it and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a couple of questions on this?
Certainly.
Is there a referral to Ways and Means on this?
No, there isn't.
I wonder why, since it would require a statewide election.
It would be at the next primary or general, wouldn't it? Yeah. Maybe I better look at it.
There would be a cost.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we pay for elections unless we put them on the ballot in a fashion that is unique.
When the bill was considered it by the Senate, they received a no fiscal impact statement from the fiscal office, and there's apparently also no revenue impact.
So they did have that
by the revenue office.
Okay.
Question then that comes to my mind, if I may, is would the next general statewide election be this May 16th date? You won't gal that up?
No.
Chairman,
yes, Representative.
Excuse me, I think the next regular general election is in November of 1990.
Mm-hmm. The bypasses the primary?
Yeah, this says the next statewide general election.
Okay, well, I interpret the word general differently.
Okay, whatever.
Mr. Chair, let me raise an issue with this.
Then it cease.
I voted for this resolution as a member of the Metro Task Force. I did it reluctantly, but I did support it, but I have some real problems with it. And I think the basic problem is, I think what's being proposed here is totally unnecessary. When this resolution was passed on the task force and went to the Senate, it provided I only have the engrossed form, I guess, in mind.
Do
you have it? The Senate took out a major provision, and I think probably appropriately so, considering both some legal problems and probably some political problems. It took out section, well, a good part of section, subsection 3 under section, or subsection 3 right under section 14, which refers to functions. A lot of that's already in the current statute, so this wouldn't change that. But what's basically been left in the resolution is a reference to the fact that the district could, by charter, in effect, provide for its form and structure. That is, it could decide to have an appointed manager instead of an elected executive, which it currently has. It could decide to go, or it could decide to have 6 members of the council instead of 9 or whatever. It could do all of that. And I think the distinction that the Senate made here is probably a reasonable one, looking at the fact that whatever the district, that is Metro, might do with its structure really is a question between it and its constituents and not a question of concern, I think, at least directly with the cities or the counties. If, on the other hand, you start talking about Metro's functions, you then start talking about the functions of cities and counties because they do relate. It would be correct to say that not always does a city or county lose a function, the metro gains one, but in many cases, if metro gains a function, a city or county may lose that or at least lose part of it. There may be a distinction between regional or local part of the function. What's being proposed here is that we have a statewide ballot measure which would allow Metro to develop a charter. It would be the only governmental entity other than a city or county that would have that option. And that per se doesn't bother me. But I'm not even convinced that this thing would pass in the Tri-County area. I've had some people say to me, a charter for Metro? You got to be kidding. Now, what really I think Metro is proposing is they want to have recognition. I don't have any problem with that. They want to have recognition as being as valuable and as important as cities and counties. They want to be treated the same if it's possible. And I think they're a very important unit. I've been very supportive of that body. But what is actually being proposed here could be accomplished by statute. In other words, I have checked with the Legislative Council, though I have not asked for an amendment, because I'm not sure I'm an amender. What I propose really is statute, not an amendment to a resolution. That is, there's nothing, I think, that would preclude the legislature from simply saying that the Metro organization, by action of its council and subsequent approval by its voters, or the voters by initiative, simply can determine whether how they want to be organized. They could do that themselves by that way. That seems to me that most direct way. It could be done immediately. We could pass a statute that says, in dealing with structure and form, the people in the metropolitan area and their governing board should be able to decide how they want to do it. If they want to go the manager form, they can put it on the ballot. If the voters want to do that, they can put it on the ballot. There is no need here for a charter. I think avoiding the charter avoids a lot of other questions. And the other thing that would concern me, if you put this on the ballot, you're going to have it down in your area, Representative Markham, others, they don't know what this creature is.
That's for sure.
If it's defeated, and I think his chance of being defeated would be quite good, because I don't know what kind of a statewide campaign you'd have on it, or who would put their money on it. If it's defeated, it seems to me it raises a lot of questions about the status and the long-term viability and development of that body. And I just don't think that's desirable. I think it raises issues that don't need to be raised. Now, I had not discussed this with the Metro people or indicated I was going to make this statement to you today, but the more I thought about it, the more I really think that a proposed charter and putting something on the ballot is just a waste of time.
Representative Stein.
Representative Markham, may I ask a question of Representative Cease?
Certainly.
I wanted to know that if in the task force discussions, what you just raised here was raised and what the response was.
It wasn't raised very much. I think it would be fair to say, and giving all the credit to Senator Otto, there was a strong feeling from Senator Otto, and I share that. You try to give Metro as much leeway and discretion as you can give them. But keep in mind, the original proposal also had this major section on function. And because I think it was hoped that at some point, let's say that the people by the initiative in the Portland area decided they wanted to add a function to Metro, and they provided for it in its charter, or they amended its charter to provide that function. I don't know that conceptually I have a problem with that, but the problem you have is that you're already dealing with cities and counties which are charter entities, and I don't know how you could develop an additional function that way by a Metro charter without impacting those other governments. I think you get into a constitutional issue, and I believe that the reason that the Senate removed that provision probably is because of a constitutional one. Now, when a county does something by charter, by and large, either it relates to structure or it relates to its functions outside of cities, and the cities provide for functions in cities. But Metro covers all of this. It covers parts of three counties and a number of cities. And as soon as you start talking about charter functions or functions given by charter, you immediately raise tremendous constitutional issues in reference to the charter functions of cities and counties. So the Senate, I gather, removed that, I think, for that reason. What you're really left with then is the structure and form aspect, which can be resolved if that's what we're going to do, if that's all we're going to be dealing with, it can be resolved by statute. That's the point. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that, I'm not saying that the legislature says to Metro, because we've already done that, that you have to have these many members on your council or you have to have this form of executive. What you're really saying is, we give you the opportunity at the local level to decide how you want to do it.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Austin.
Well, when I first saw this bill, I thought that it was a good idea to have some local control, but the longer the representative from Northeast Portland talks, the more I'm reminded that when the citizens of Multnomah County get together to change their charter, as they seem to do on a fairly regular basis, the results are not always ones that most independent viewers of governmental structure would agree are good results, and it may be better to have those of us in the outlying parts of the state determining the structure of government in the metropolitan area.
Like the tax base issue in reverse. Greg, you want to respond to this? Do you have some comments?
Not really.
I don't.
Yes,
mean,
I
Carl,
do.
I mean
Greg McMurdo. From representing the Metropolitan Service District, I think Representative Cease has raised some excellent points. First of all, the reason that the resolution is in the form that it is in is because of concerns by the cities and counties over who would have authority to do what, so it's a compromise resolution. There's no doubt about that. Secondly, we have always recognized that passing a constitutional amendment for Metro would be very difficult, because how do you convince the person in Riddle or the person in Lakeview that isn't going to affect them when they're asked, well, why is it on the ballot? Why do I have to vote on it? So it would be very difficult to pass. With respect to its ability to pass within the metropolitan region, I think it would be a tough sell, and I honestly don't know who would be there to sell it, though. That's another problem that Representative Cease has raised. One thing I would like to point out.
Excuse me, Representative Hostia.
Would it make it easier to pass if we prohibited special levy elections or put a program into it?
As long as it would apply to all districts.
Pardon my interruption.
There is one thing, though, that is significant about the resolution that could not be accomplished by statute, and that is, while it is true the Legislative Assembly could provide that the electors of the district or the council or the executive, through the regular process, could refer its form of governance to the voters, there would be nothing to keep a subsequent legislative assembly from taking that authority away or from prescribing a certain form of government for Metro. So that's the real advantage to having that locked in the law. I do agree that it's going to be a difficult concept to sell. I would like to point out this was not Metro's bill. It was the task force bill. It is a bill that we are supporting, and if it does is adopted by the House, we will certainly work toward passage of the constitutional amendment. Keep in mind, too, that in 1991, then there would have to be legislation that would set out how the charter itself would be drafted and who would be on the charter committee, so we're not talking about an overnight process. I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Greg, would county home rule is up is statutory, isn't it?
No, it's
is
constitutional.
Is it in the Constitution the option they get to have home
Article
rule?
6, Section 2. Now, there's very little difference between the county home rule charter. In fact, it's identical to what you see in front of you, with one exception. And I think probably by implication that doesn't make much difference in this resolution. The only difference is that the county home rule section provides that the county shall have jurisdiction over counties that have home rule charters shall have jurisdiction over matters of countywide concern or county concern. There's no similar language in here, but I think by implication that Metro would have jurisdiction over areas of metropolitan concern or regional concern. That language perhaps should have been in here. And I frankly thought it was, but when I looked, it was not.
Mr. Chair, one of the things that could be done, I think we'd obviously have to have approvals to do it, but if there's a strong feeling on the committee that they want to put a proposed charter on the ballot, I don't have any objection to that. I don't quite see the point of it, but I think that if we also had a statute that would permit them to do the form of government that they may want at some point. Let's say, for example, a group of citizens decided that they want to go to the manager form. That's not my, I think the current form is, I like the current form, basically. But if they want to go to the manager form, I would like to see them have the opportunity to put that on the ballot. Let them decide it.
And I'd really like to see a statute that would permit people in the area, or the council, if they wanted to put that issue on the ballot, to do it. And there wouldn't be any reason, if we had such a statute, that you could still have a charter. If the charter failed, you still got something. But I think what you're really doing here by itself is you're putting something on the ballot, which would take some time. You'd have a charter commission. And then I really have a hard time believing that the voters of this state. You see, unfortunately, if you're talking about a county charter or a city charter, the people in that area are voting on it. Even then, it's difficult. For those of you around the state know how difficult it is to get a county charter. We've got about 5 or 6 counties with charters, and probably 6 others that have tried and have failed. People are very suspicious of giving too much open-ended discretion to local governments. Now, that tends to be less true if they're talking about cities. They've got a lot of different kinds of functions. But when you talk about counties, they're reluctant to do that. Putting this on the ballot, because it's a statewide legislative item, and asking the voters of the state to approve a charter for Metro is, on one level, almost ludicrous.
Representative C. Seven, you've made that point 5 times.
Well, I want you to understand, I would like them to be able to do some more things.
Thank you.
I just don't see this accomplishing that mission.
Representative Young.
I have a little bit more faith in the voters than some people do, but I think you can go around the state and sell this to newspaper people and other people that, hey, this affects what some group can do constitutionally. And I think most people can look at that and determine whether it's an issue that they really want to be that involved in. I could see a very high undervote on an issue like this around the state because people don't care too much. I really am fearful of just having it dangling there with the legislature being able to do whatever they want. And I think, and I've mentioned this to some other people, I think Representative Otto and I showed a lot of restraint last session by not stepping in when Metro was kind of vulnerable in terms of a new elected executive and some hassling back and forth between the executive and the council. I think there were a number of people in this body that would have liked to have gotten in and tinkered a little bit with how Metro was set up and how they were functioning. And I think if either one of us or both of us in particular would have wanted to do that, I think in 2 months we could have restructured Metro and Metro would not have pulled together and come in and said, no, don't mess with us. I think that there was a lot of disarray. And I think just at any time somebody wants to tinker with Metro, if we don't do it constitutionally and at least make that clean effort at it, that there'll be people in always with the bill on the number of counselors, on what their compensation is or something. And I just think that at a point you have to decide whether they're going to be a grown-up organization and try to set their own standards and their own way of conduct.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think the electors of the region of Metro itself, if they understand what home rule means, in other words, that it is self-determination and local control, would pass the constitutional amendment. I think the most difficult thing would be to convince the newspaper publisher in Riddle or in Eugene or in Albany and the voter that this doesn't affect you, but please vote for it, or undervote, just leave it blank. So I think that we would have to do quite a selling job, and since it's a ballot measure, public employees could then, of course, not be involved in promoting its passage or failure. But there is a commitment on the part of Metro to support this and to make it become law if the House approves this resolution.
Mr. Chair. It is interesting. I think I like the faith that is indicated here. And I guess I would normally consider myself a very optimistic liberal type. But if you look at the votes on these issues, the votes on county, city-county consolidation, what has happened, or even in county consolidation in many cases, what's happened in the number of instances, the people, early polls have shown that you give them a concept and they think it's great,
You start talking about the specifics, and all of a sudden your support disappeared. The interesting thing about the adoption of County Home Rule in Multnomah County was that people voted for it because they liked the idea of home rule, but they found out what it meant. By that time, they'd already voted, and they tried to repeal the vote, and the statute said you had to wait 6 months, and by that time, I guess they lost interest in it. What I would like to do is have a safety valve that would give us something in the meantime. If you want to put on the ballot, we'd also have a statute that would permit the local people to do something, because I honestly believe that the voters of this state will never approve such a measure.
Mr. Chairman?
Impossible.
I guess I might, as a matter of timing, sort of take opposition to Representative Cease's remarks. It seems to me if this thing went on the ballot in 1990 and it passed, then the 91 legislature would provide a process. Metro would have to go through something. So we're probably looking at 92 or so before a Metro charter would be in place. We also have legislation that we're considering that talks about the structure of Metro in this session. It seems to me if we pass something this session that changes the structure from what it is, or if we decide we like the structure the way it is, it's probably a good idea to let it sit there for 4 years and see what happens with this. So I don't think that, personally, that beyond this bill and any other bill we may pass this session regarding the structure of Metro, that we really ought to tinker with it, because I think that part of the weakness of that and other governments in that part of the state are that their structure changes so often that people don't understand it, and the people who are trying to operate the government don't understand it, and so then they lose a certain amount of credibility and support from the populace in the process. So it seems to me that it might be worth taking a shot at this, looking at the other Metro bills, and then in the 93 session or whenever after this is, or 91 session, whenever this is had a chance to be voted on, the people reconsider what they might want to do.
Mr. Chairman.
I'd
like to, Greg, if you would, I don't know if you can explain for me again why this was proposed as a constitutional amendment after listening to Representative Cease's comments about the capability of just making a statute change. Apparently, this was as proposed by the Task Force on Metropolitan Regional Government. They're the ones
that
suggested that it be a constitutional amendment. Does this parallel wording in the Constitution as far as counties and municipalities are concerned, and that's why it was done that way?
It is not the same as city home rule. It is quite similar to the constitutional provision for county home rule, with the exception being there's no phrase that indicates that a metropolitan service district will have jurisdiction over matters of district concern. And in the county section, there are provisions that safeguard the tenure and salaries of judges, circuit court judges within the counties. And of course, that isn't in this. But
are your comments directed to the engrossed version now?
Correct.
After the Senate amendments?
The engrossed version. I can tell you that this was a concept that came from Senator Otto, and he feels very strongly about it. There was some, as I mentioned, resistance from the cities and counties that there would be problems over who had authority over what, and that is why those amendments were made and why you have the language before you. I would like to just note an Oregonian editorial of Saturday the 18th, which does support this. And I'm not saying that means it's a good bill, but I am suggesting that I do think that editorially that we can get some support for this, both in the Portland region, and I'm hoping editorially we can get some explanation of it outside the Metro region.
Even if they don't sign their editorial?
That's always been one of my favorite bills, Representative Markham.
But how concerned are you about not having the wording in there that they would have control over things that are a regional concern? And the reason I say that is that I think anything that Metro is doing now probably has countywide concern also, if you were to break it down to that level. Would you be more comfortable if we had that language put
I would be, but I don't know that the cities and counties would then support it. I don't know that they're all that thrilled with it in the first place. Ultimately, as we all know, matters of city concern and matters of county concern are court-invented phrases. And to a large extent, particularly county home rule has become pretty meaningless since the PERS cases involving the city of Astoria and the city of LaGrande. But I think that it would make more sense if that sentence were in there, I suppose, if it became a choice of having it in there or not getting it at all. I'd rather have it the way it is if the cities and counties were to oppose it.
Mr. Chair, just 1 second, please. You want to make a comment here.
I just wanted to comment that I served during the interim as the principal staff for the task force, and in response to Representative Wehage's question as to why this is constitutional in nature, we were advised by legislative council that because the existing county home rule authority for a home rule charter is in the Constitution, that it would be necessary to have Metro's home rule charter also be placed in the Constitution. So we were advised by legislative council that this was basically the way we had to go if we wanted Metro to have what is traditionally viewed as a home rule charter.
I think the point, though, there's a real distinction here. It's one thing for the legislature to say that a governing body like Metro has certain function. It's because, in effect, what the legislature is doing may be taking those functions away from somebody else. Are we back on tune here? Mr. Chair, I would say, in reference to this difference between constitutional and statutory, it's one thing for the legislature to give functions to a local government, which in this case is Metro. It's quite another thing to say that the people, by charter, can give it function. The problem you've got, and this is why I understand, I gather that one provision is removed, you've got in the Portland area two counties that have home rule, one county that doesn't, and a bunch of cities that have home rule. If you give Metro home rule powers on functions, and it covers that area, what is to prevent its populace from deciding they want to add a function and take away from all those cities and those counties? Now, I'm not arguing that that might not be desirable in some cases. It might well be desirable. I might find myself in some cases supporting that. But it seems to me that if you say, in effect, that the voters there through a district, now this is not a municipality. This is a district government. It's a big one, a multi-purpose district, but it is not a municipality. That if you allow the voters then to take powers by vote away from cities and counties which are home rule, you've got a constitutional question. You've got a constitutional problem. On the other hand, what this resolution has now done, which I think makes it next to meaningless, though not quite,